Hi, this is Mark Trencher. I just wanted to share with you information on a new podcast named Orthonomics. We explore fascinating and timely Orthodox Jewish community issues through the dual lenses of actual data and informed conversation with communal experts. Our recent episodes have talked about such things as the challenges of being Orthodox in a secular society, why some people become Orthodox and why some others leave, the cost of Orthodoxy, educational issues, the evolving roles of women, and upcoming is a new study on the lives of Orthodox Jewish single individuals. So take a listen. The Orthonomics podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.
The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
Do you find yourself with just a ton of tasks to do, but have no time to do them? You may have that experience at home, at work, or if you're like the vast majority of people listening, about 2 weeks ago preparing for Pesach. But whether it's personal, professional, or religious, there seems to be so much to do on a daily basis that many of us often feel overwhelmed or just unable to accomplish all we want to do. That's why we invited on this week's guest.
Hi, my name is Avi Freeman. I am a productivity coach for both personal and professional purposes.
Avi will be teaching us about time management, procrastination, and what we can do about it. All right, Avi, thank you so much for joining me right now. Now, a productivity coach, I'm going to have you explain that. But first, I want you to give us a little background about yourself, how you got into being a productivity coach.
Absolutely. So I was working in a different job. I was working a 9-to-5. I had an hour commute each way. I was in graduate school for a second career. And at the same time, I was actually starting a side business. And I was completely overwhelmed. I thought I was an organized person naturally, but I was completely overwhelmed. And I was having late payments and I was having missed deadlines in school. And I realized I needed to really gain control of myself and gain control of my productivity. So I took a bunch of courses, I took some trainings, and I was able to reach a point where I was not only just barely surviving, I was actually thriving in that capacity. And I realized that there are so many other people like me that are doing the same things. Obviously, everyone has different circumstances, but everyone needs that boost of building their systems and building their mental headspace to be able to accomplish all they want to accomplish. So I decided to pay it forward and become a productivity coach and help people in that capacity.
All right. Now, what exactly does a productivity coach do?
Everyone has different aspects of their life where they feel like they are slightly overwhelmed or completely overwhelmed, or they're looking for areas where they want to increase their productivity to the max level. And what I do with each person is that we sit down individually on a one-on-one coaching, and we assess what their current system is, how they manage their day, how they manage their time, their calendars, their emails, et cetera. And we look for little aspects and little components of where they are feeling overwhelmed and feel like they're lacking their efficiency of where they could accomplish. And we take coaching sessions and we provide homework and go week by week and provide value, tips, tricks, or concepts, or build the system from scratch for different people. And it's very personalized for each person.
All right. So what I want to do here tonight, not to take away some of your clients or things like that, but maybe giving a little bit of an overview of general concepts that you discuss. And then I want to relate them a little bit to the from world. I mean, we're going to talk about different aspects of people's lives where this is relevant, business, home, things like that. But then we'll take it in and talk about things that are specific to our listeners. So let's start with time management. Time management is one of the bugaboos of almost every person. I don't know anybody who doesn't struggle at least a little bit with time management. So let's talk about why time management is so important and why people struggle with it so much.
Absolutely. So time management is a crucial part of efficiency because oftentimes we go through our days, we go through our weeks, our months and years, not realizing what we're accomplishing, what we're trying to do, what we have been doing as a result. We get at the end of a day, we reach 5 o'clock at the end of a work day and realize, what have I done all day? What have I actually accomplished? Or we get distracted at night. And next thing you know, it's 11 o'clock and where did all the time go? So it's important for us to really understand of where our time is. And time management doesn't mean I need to have every little second checked off, every minute accounted for. That's not the goal of time management. The goal of time management is really to just have a general understanding of what we are doing throughout our day, whether it's a 15-minute increments, whether it's 30-minute increments, and to be able to assess whether we are accomplishing what we want and we are intentional about, or we are finding alternate activities that are distracting us, and really just trying to hone in and find out why we are getting distracted and methods to keep us in check.
All right, let's talk about those distractions. One of those distractions is obviously going to be that fun device that we now all have attached to us. I'm going to put that on the side for a second, because that's its own discussion. What are some of the less obvious distractions that somebody might have throughout the course of a day, a week?
Well, the truth, I want to just paint the picture of what distractions are. Okay. And that's why I started with time management, because if we don't have intention with our day, then we can't call something a distraction if we don't know what is distracting us from us. As Anir Eyal talks about in his book, Indistractable, about when we find ourselves distracted, oftentimes we don't necessarily even know what we're being distracted from. So it's important to first understand that the whole concept of distraction is it's a lack of traction. Attraction is something that's moving us towards our goal or towards what we are intentional about. And distraction is something that's pulling us away from what we are intentionally trying to do. So obviously the phone, when it comes to that, so if we are intentional with our time and we know what we're trying to accomplish, and then the phone had the notifications or something pops up, we get a phone call, then that would be a distraction. But oftentimes what happens is that we don't even know what we're supposed to be doing in the moment. So we can't necessarily even call our phones a distraction. What's important with distractions also to understand is that there's really internal and external distractions. Internal distractions means something that I'm emotionally feeling, I'm just dreading to do something, or I don't want to take action on something. I'm trying to find anything or everything to really distract myself from. And external distractions are things, let's say notifications, kids running in the house, your boss coming over to you at work, things like that. Those are more external distractions. And it's important just to identify when we are distracted, is it an internal or whether it's external distraction?
Okay, so one of my favorite distractions that I kind of place on myself are emails. And they could be personal emails, they could be work emails. I find myself kind of making an excuse that the reason that I can't get anything done is because I have to answer all of these emails. Meetings is another one. Well, I can't do any of the work that I have to do because I have meetings. So this is a two-pronged question. First of all, for those of us who are running a company, how much emphasis should we put on answering emails and holding meetings? And then for those of us who are employees, how much of this do we let ourselves get distracted by? Are there any strategies that you can suggest for people who get bogged down by emails and meetings all day and then aren't able to be productive until all those things are passed?
So when it comes to, well, let's start from the manager and the owner perspective, because they have more control naturally of the time of the day than other people in the company. So when it comes to managers and owners, what's important is to time block our schedule in a way where we're allowing ourselves to do productive and specific work. When we have general projects that we don't necessarily have the time to spend doing those projects, then we don't feel like we're making overall progress in our day, and we're really just fighting fires all day. What we could do is make sure that at least starting off our day intentionally, deciding what we want to accomplish that day, making a checklist of a few things, top priority items to do, and also giving ourselves time blocks, specific time blocks. It could be 30 minutes, it could be 45, an hour, whatever it is. And that's closed door, no meetings, no calls, no emails, and really just spending specific time, whether it's making a proposal, whether it's doing some business development, things like that, to be able to move ourselves forward. And when we finish our day, we at least know that we accomplished that during the day. When it comes to employees, employees obviously have a different relationship with time because they are being told what to do when they're supposed to do it. So it's important as employees to be open with your employer, be open with your manager and say, there are certain things I want to do, I want to accomplish, but I don't necessarily have chunks of time available for focus time. I need to really spend 30 uninterrupted minutes doing this project. I don't have 30 uninterrupted minutes because I'm being bogged down by other coworkers, by emails, by phone calls, or even by you. So it's important to have that open dialogue and explain to your manager and say, look, I need 2 hours today. I have this project, this proposal for the client I need to address. And when can I do that? Another thing what we could do is make a schedule of what we are doing during the day as an employee, and taking that schedule, if we have it written down in a clear manner, and then presenting it to our manager or our employer and saying, here is what I am doing during the day. How would you like me to adjust my schedule? And how would you like me to prioritize this work versus the other work that I'm trying to do at the same time?
Phenomenal. Now, let's get to the question that everybody's going to be asking my phone. That's probably everybody's biggest distraction throughout the course of the day at work, and when they're commuting, and when they're driving, and when they're at home with their families. And basically the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning, the last thing you do when you go to bed, and probably the first thing you do after Shabbos is over, all of these things is the phone. How do we manage the phone? Now, I don't want to talk about this from an addiction perspective. We have another episode on that people could talk about. I want to talk about it as a time management problem.
So again, just to reiterate from before, so just keeping in mind, we also need to know what we're being distracted from with our phone. Is our phone actually a distraction, or is it intentional use? So being able to clarify that will depend on the context and the manner we're using our phone. So let's say, for example, we're trying to be present with our kids and the phone is distracting us, then that would be a distraction. If on the other hand, I have an important phone call to make, then that phone is not a distraction. That phone, when it rings and the person who I'm supposed to be in touch with is calling me, that's not an actual distraction. That's actually traction bringing me forward to what I need to do. So when it comes to times of day, so Mel Robbins talks about this extensively in the 5-second rule in a lot of her talks about not having our phones next to us and not using our phones for an alarm, because what ends up happening is when we wake up from our phones, first thing we do is we're looking at what other people are intending for us to do that day. We're looking at emails that people are expecting us to respond to or to look at. We're looking at social media of other people that are trying to get our attention. All these things are trying to get our attention before we're able to really focus on what we want to accomplish, what we want to do that day. So that's from the beginning of the day. When in terms of night, same thing. We're trying to shut off our phones, or at least plug it in, not near our beds. I actually bought a separate alarm clock because I want to make sure that I don't have an excuse of I need my phone to wake me up, because alarm clocks are $5, $10, not a big deal to just get one that I can wake you up the same manner. And that way I'm not looking at my phone prior to going to bed. So when it comes to other aspects of our phone, right, because we have all these distractions, we have all the notifications, we also need to, when we have these notifications pinging and dinging throughout the day, it's important to differentiate between necessary and unnecessary notifications. Do I actually need this notification? Is it actually serving me, or is it actually detracting me away from what I want to do? Whether it's a project, whether it's our productivity, whether it's our family, whatever it is, we want to make sure that if it's an unnecessary notification because it's detracting us from what we actually want to accomplish. So looking at our notifications could take a couple of minutes, just go through all the different apps. Do I really need a notification for the latest thing on Netflix? Do I really need a notification for someone who wants to friend me on Facebook? Do I really need a notification for every single WhatsApp chat that I'm in when someone posts? Those kinds of things that we can assess and say, you know what, this is not something I need to be notified immediately. It's not something that I need to distract me from other activities. And when I get to it, I will take a look in those apps and look at those specific notifications within the app.
It's funny because every app that you ever download, their main goal is to get you to use their app. So when you download the app, the automatic setting enabled is notifications. So if you downloaded WhatsApp, the automatic setting is that notifications will come in. But that will be the case if you have Facebook or YouTube or any podcast app that you might have that a new episode downloads, or any app that you have that you could think of on your phone that has notification possibilities will have the automatic setting enabled to notify you when something new happens. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of those things. So exactly. Maybe it's pertinent to go through your phone, to go through your settings and to disable some of these notifications, decide which was. So for me, I'll give you an example. What I did, because you mentioned this, I thought about this conversation. I have several different emails on my phone. I have my personal email, I have my business email, I have my work email, I have this podcast email, I have a bunch of different emails on my phone. I have only enabled notifications on two of those emails. That even though all of them are on Gmail, they're all there, but you can even go down to each individual email and tell you which email it is that is going to give you a notification. So maybe it is pertinent that people take, it doesn't take that long. Go to your settings, find notifications, and there's a list of all of your apps as to which one just, you can just turn off the notifications. And when you download a new app, you can remove the notification. So for instance, I have the New York Times crossword, and I used to have a notification every day when the new crossword came up that, oh, there's a new crossword. I don't need that notification. If I want to do the crossword that day, I'll do the crossword that day. If I don't want to, I won't. But I don't need a notification, because their goal is to get you to use that app more and more. So I removed my Instagram notifications. I removed all of those notifications that I don't need. They're all gone. I'm not sure if there's something that you could add on to that, but that was my personal experience.
Yes, especially the ones that you're going into anyways. Like someone's checking their emails all the time anyways, or you're going into your WhatsApp anyways. Do you really need the notification to stop you from whatever you're doing, buzz in your pocket, and go to that app immediately to check that notification? Or when I get to it, then I'll look at the notification. I'll look at that different status. What also happens is if we have incessant notifications, we end up becoming numb to the important notifications, right? Because we have 150 notifications going off each hour. What we end up doing is looking at the unnecessary notifications incessantly, and then we tend to miss the important ones within the mix.
Let's talk about there are two basic types of days that end up being on the extreme. There's the crammed a lot of stuff into one day days, and there's the long, boring, nothing going on days. All right. So this is kind of the opposite of distractions. This is, I have so much to do. How am I going to organize this? And I have not a lot to do. What am I doing with my time? So you could pick either one of those two things to talk about.
Absolutely. So I'll talk about the overwhelm, because that's something I really enjoy helping people with. So when it comes to overwhelm, what happens oftentimes while we are overwhelmed is because there are so many things that are running in our head, and we have all this mental clutter of all the different kinds of projects and tasks and goals that we have without having a clear understanding of what we're actively working on, what things could be saved for another time. Is there a project I'm waiting for someone else to get back from me? Is there a task I need to do, but I can't do it right now? I need to do it in a week from now or in a different context. So really just trying to, what I advise clients to do is to really do a mind sweep. So for when you're feeling overwhelmed, oftentimes it's because there's so much on our heads. If we do a mind sweep, and I can provide someone with a mind sweep flyer to go through this mind sweep process, and really just write down every single thing that's on their head. And it could take 30 minutes, it could take an hour. The more frequently you do it, the less time it will take. But is there anything that's on your head that is not processed, is not set up in a system yet? When you take all those things and you realize, no wonder I'm overwhelmed, because I have all these different projects that have open loops and I have no clarity on when they're going to get done. I have no clarity on how they're going to get done and by whom they're going to get done. Then obviously we're going to get overwhelmed when we have other things that come at us at the same time. So just really trying to ground ourselves, be able to say, this is everything that's on my mind. I only have the capacity to work on a couple of projects each month. Everything else can either be a someday project, or I'm not even sure that I'm the right person to do this. I can delegate it or just never do it. And just getting that clarity will really help us in reducing the overwhelm, and then taking the projects you are working on and trying to contextualize it based on what the next physical action is to do, and when can I do the next action? Do I need to do it on an errand? Is it a phone call? Can I do it right now? Do I need to put it on my calendar for next week, next month, next quarter, et cetera?
Okay, now I'm gonna press you on the long, boring days as well, because I feel like those are the underutilized days. And yeah, you have those at work sometimes, but often you might find those on the weekends, Shabbos, long Shabbos that we're entering those times of year. Mm-hmm. You might have these long days with not a lot to do and you find yourself sleeping. What is there something that we can do on those types of days, especially on the Shabbos ones, because there isn't a lot that you can catch up with in terms of work or even in terms of the recreational stuff you have at home. What can you do with that time?
So with that answer, obviously, will depend on each person and their circumstances. Some people like to spend time, more time with their family. Some people more time with socializing. Some people more time reading books. Some people more time learning. So depending on each person, what their goals are there anything that they want to specifically accomplish on those days? We'll address Shabbos for now. Anything that we want to do on those days that we want to ensure that we're spending enough time with. Obviously, we all like sleeping on Shabbos afternoon, not all, but a lot of us like sleeping Shabbos afternoon because it's the one day of the week where we get to detox from our work week and be able to just spend time and catching up on our relaxation and our self-care. At the same time, there are other activities we like to do on those days besides for sleeping. So when it comes to Shabbos afternoon, again, trying to be intentional beforehand. Are there books I want to read? Do I need to get them from the farm store? Do I need to borrow them from the library? What do I want to do? Are there any specific magazines or newspapers or articles I want to read? And prep them in advance to be able to give ourselves that time and space to actually do it when it comes push comes to shove. Again, will there be curveballs? Will there be things that come up? 100%. Will we be able to do everything when we want to do it? Not always. But what's important is that if we're intentional and we set ourselves up for success beforehand, we're much more likely to actually materialize on those goals and projects than if we didn't set up.
All right. So now that we're on the topic of Shabbos, let's talk about, as I promised at the beginning, let's talk about the Orthodox Jewish specific areas that might come up. So you mentioned the first thing about prepping for Shabbos, prepping for Yontif. Let's talk about those types of things. Obviously, the more you're able to prep beforehand, the better you'll be able to enjoy the Yontif. What are some strategies that you might put forward? Now, we're recording this on Pesach. Pesach is probably the most hectic prep time or leading up to Pesach is the most hectic prep time of the year. I will tell you that my most hectic time of year is more the Tishrei holidays, because you have to build a sukkah, you have to do tashlich, you have to get your lulav and esrog. Davening during Chol Hamoed is longer. There's just a ton of things, and I'm not even talking about, like, there's a ton of other things. How many times do you run back and forth to Home Depot just times of sukkahs? But there's so many different things that go on in that holiday in terms of prep. But all holidays basically are massive amount of undertaking and prep. So is Shabbos. I'll also tell you that for me, I can't tell you how many years in a row this has now been that I have not been able to buy, like, I just did not buy my oil for for Hanukkah until after the time I was supposed to light on the first night of Hanukkah. It's happened so many times just because of all the other things that I do, and I just forgot about it. Or I pushed it off. So what can we talk about? What can we do in terms of talking about the prep for Yontif and Shabbos?
So when it first comes to Shabbos prep and Yontif prep, obviously Shabbos is much less strenuous than Yontif and there's much less things to do. But we know Shabbos, Erev Shabbos is a pretty crazy time for most people's houses. So first things first is that we have to understand what's realistic and what isn't with our time. Is it a busy season in our life? Are there things going on at work or home? Is it a Yontif season and we're having extra company and people coming in? Is it early Shabbos and we have much less time Friday afternoon? So just being aware of what we have the capacity to do and we don't have the capacity to do will be instrumental in understanding how we can prepare, right? If it's an early Shabbos and we have a crazy week at work and we're still expecting to serve guests both Friday night and Shabbos day, again, is that realistic or not? That each person has to make that decision and decide between husband and wife what they should be doing. In terms of the actual preparation itself, what I find most valuable is having a checklist before Shabbos of things that we need to do. And even though some things sound so simple and some so simplistic, oftentimes those are the things that will get forgotten. For example, putting on the Shabbos mode on your oven and your fridge, or setting the timer for the lights, or if you're cutting toilet paper beforehand, things like that. If we make sure we have a checklist and we can just go through the checklist quickly on Friday afternoon, have it laminated on a fridge, something like that, and just check off saying, I did this, I did that. Just that alone will give us the ease to know that things will not slip through the cracks because I need to check that list before we light candles. What's also important to do is to try to delegate as much as we can to others in the house. Again, it's a great opportunity to teach our kids the Shabbos preparation, to be able to get involved in the process so that they can, A, be involved in the mitzvah itself, and B, to be able to give them the skills to run their own households when times come for them to get married, be able to discern age-appropriate things that we can delegate to our kids. For younger kids, they can do a little bit of sweeping, or they can do setting the table. For older kids, they can make some food, they can go shopping, they can set up the candles. So everyone has their other things that they can delegate and be able to share their responsibilities, so it's not all dependent on both the parents in the house.
On my house, I know we have a chalkboard in the kitchen that has our list of things to do. It's not just an Erev Shabbos thing, but on Erev Shabbos, that has the most things on it. As you were talking, I thought of another thing that we always do in my family. We always pick our Purim theme, like in December, like right after Hanukkah, we sit down and we're like, all right, what's this Purim theme going to be? But we don't get around to ordering anything for it until like a week before Purim. It's just something that we always do. We always decide what it's going to be. We always look up the stuff that we want to get for it, and then we never get it until the last minute. So in that one, I want to bring you to the concept of procrastination, which is kind of a little bit of the inverse of what we were discussing about time management. This is more of a time, like the way I think about procrastination is I have the time to do this now. I just don't want to. For whatever reason in my mind, I don't want to do this. I have the time. I'd rather sit and watch something or like, I don't have to do this right now, but I'm going to go do X instead of doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing. I will tell you where my biggest challenge in this regard is exercising. So I know that I want to exercise X amount of times a week. And then I said, all right, tonight's the night. It's going to happen. 9 o'clock. I'm going to go and go to the gym, and it's going to happen. And then at 8:30, I'm like, all right, but you know what? This room really needs to be cleaned. And while I'm cleaning this room, I got to put away this thing that's been out for a while, and I got to do this and that and this. And then all of a sudden I turn around, it's 10:30. I'm like, all right, you know what? I was still productive, but I wasn't.
Tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow.
I'll do it tomorrow. And by the end of the week, you're like, well, I wanted to exercise 4 times this week, and I've done it 0. So those are my, that's how I see procrastination, but maybe you can shed some light on what I'm doing wrong.
Sure. So procrastination really takes a few different aspects, meaning why are we procrastinating and what kinds of things are we procrastinating? So if we're procrastinating, let's say building a routine or procrastinating doing a productive thing, is it a one-time task or is it a bigger project, right? Oftentimes, an example I use with my clients is, if you want to, let's say, buy a bookshelf for your living room, and you're just like, hey, I need to buy a bookshelf. I have it on my to-do list. Buy a bookshelf, right? What oftentimes, if you look at it and say, why am I not doing it? And really just having that internal awareness oftentimes is either because I'm not really clear on what the end result is, or I don't have the capacity to actually do it in its right current time. So if let's say I need to buy a bookshelf, but can you actually go online and buy a bookshelf right now? Not necessarily, because I have to find my tape measure. Do you have a tape measure? No, I don't have a tape measure. I lost it, misplaced it. So your next action would be to go borrow a tape measure from a friend or to buy a tape measure. And that's a much easier pill to swallow than to build or buy a bookcase, because you have the ability to do that. It's a much smaller task to be able to accomplish versus something that, you know, I really want to do, but I'm not actually doing it step by step.
So break down the task into smaller, more manageable tasks.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And ideally take the task and break it down into a less than 10 minute capacity. Things that'll take less than 10 minutes. If it's a quick thing and it's a small actionable thing that I could actively work on, that would be much more productive in terms of actually getting it done versus looking at a general overall project. Let's say building a sukkah is a very big task. When you break it down into what are all the steps that need to happen and what's the sequence of the steps, the first step might be to discuss with your spouse, where do we want a sukkah being put in our yard, right? For some people, that could be the reason why I'm not doing it. If you think about it, it's because I don't even know where to start. And the first step might actually be have a discussion. First step might be, what material am I making out of? The first step might be, I know that I'm not gonna be able to build it myself, so decide who I can build it with, or am I going to hire someone to build it, or things like that.
So if I want to break down my initial original question about the exercising, so a smaller subtask might be getting changed into your exercise attire. What would be another thing? Like, I don't want you to give me free advice right now. I know this is your profession, but let's talk. What are some of the other subtasks that I can break this down into?
Right. So in terms of, when it comes to exercise routine, oftentimes it's the other form of procrastination because I'm resistant because I either have, let's say, a fear of success, a fear of failure. I'd rather be doing something else. So that, again, is another discussion. But when it comes to breaking down to manageable tasks, the first thing might be decide what form of exercise I want to do. Is it something that, whether it's seasonal, can I actually go outside and exercise? Am I doing it in my house? Am I going to a gym? Do I have a gym membership? Breaking that down into steps of building a routine would be, a step could be setting an alarm for the appropriate time. A task could be discussing with my spouse to make sure that I have this time available to work out. A next action could be buy a new pair of shoes because my old ones are breaking. And that's really, every time I exercise, the back of my sneakers is digging into my heel and it's uncomfortable. Or the next action could be decide on a route to take while jogging that's safe and that's something that I'll enjoy. So these are all things. And again, it's a very personalized discussion and each person, why they're not exercising and what kinds of steps they can take. But these are more generalized ideas of breaking a project down into smaller tasks. And the same thing again for Purim, having a discussion about a theme. You have a theme, again, taking that and breaking down into next actions, right? In terms of, again, people don't necessarily understand that when we look at projects we have to do, whether personal or professional, the yontif itself and the preparation of yontif is also a project. So we also need to understand that we break down those bigger projects into smaller tasks. Let's say it could be one project of Purim and have other sub projects of, I have to decide with my suda, I have to decide with the costume, I have to decide with what I'm drinking, I have to decide with shalachmanos. All those different things are sub projects in the overall bigger project of Purim.
All right, I cannot let you go without discussing morning and evening routines. So we touched a little bit about where you should have your phone, but what are other things that people either procrastinate about in the morning or aren't managing their time wisely in the evening or things like that? How can people optimize their times in the mornings and the evenings?
So one thing that the biggest form of procrastination in the morning is the snooze button. That's most common. People say, you know, I'm going to wake up at 6 o'clock. I have all these intentions. I'm going to do the lunches for the kids. I'm going to go to shacharis. I'm going to do all these different things. And then you snooze, 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 whether it's a 7-minute snooze, 9-minute snooze, whatever it is. And all of a sudden it's 6:45 and I didn't do any of my intentions. So understanding, and this actually Mel Robbins talks about as well in her book, The 5-Second Rule, there is scientific components to not pressing the snooze button because when we wake up and then we are putting our bodies back into a REM cycle, we end up waking up more tired even after like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes than when we were when we originally woke up. So oftentimes we want to snooze because we feel like we need a little bit more rest. And oftentimes it's not the case that we actually will feel more rested. So bearing that in mind, that to avoid pressing the snooze button as much as we can, that will help us. Also understanding that our time limitations when we have distractions flying at us in the morning rush. So either we can wake up earlier than our kids, or we can prepare as much the night before so there's minimal things to do in the morning, things like that. It'll be help us be more realistic with what actually will happen instead of thinking of an idealistic, this is the perfect morning routine, which rarely actually happens.
So I will also add in that I have a Fitbit. I'm sure people who have like Apple Watches or other smart watches have these things too, but they have in here a smart wake where you set a time and then it will wake you up at the optimal time when your sleep pattern allows it. So it won't wake you up while you're in a deep sleep. It'll wait until you're in a REM cycle or where you're in a more lighter time, and it'll wake you up at that point, which ever since I started using it ended up being a better time for me than the regular alarm. Because if you're out of it, if you're way into a deep sleep and that happens to be when your alarm goes off, you are done. Like I, that, at least me, I am done. I cannot recover from that. And the rest of my day is basically ruined. But if it waits till a time, and I've seen this personally, where I'm not in such a deep sleep, I'm less groggy when I wake up. I'm still tired. Don't get me wrong. I'm still tired, but it seems like a better use of a better time to wake up than the preordained time, despite what part of sleep my body is in.
Right. And also what's important also to keep in mind is that sometimes we're over idealistic of what we actually want to accomplish, but the time we're going to sleep so late at night, it's not so practical to wake up that early in the morning. So again, the nighttime routine bleeds right into the morning routine. It's very, they lean on each other. Exactly. So at the same time, it might not be realistic if someone's going to sleep at 12 o'clock to say, you know, I'm going to wake up at 4:45 and hit the gym because I'm getting very few hours of sleep. So there are times when it should intentionally set our alarms later to be more productive in the morning, as counterintuitive as it sounds.
That's interesting. Are those the times that you might have, for whatever reason, had to go to sleep later the night before? We just had Seder nights. We know that people were going to sleep a lot later than they are accustomed to. Maybe they could wake up a little later than they're accustomed to on the next day. But there are times when you go to sleep a lot later than you had originally intended. What happens on those nights? I mean, this might not be a time management question so much as a sleep therapy type of a question, but on those nights that I go to sleep late, but I can't afford to wake up late the next morning, do you have any thoughts of those on those particular days?
Right. So the truth is, I actually have a different routine my Friday morning than my other mornings, because Thursday night we're up late cooking for Shabbos. Both my wife and I are cooking and helping around the kitchen. And what I oftentimes, I have to wait until the food cools down to put it away in the fridge, freezer, etc. So I understand that I am going to sleep much later on a Thursday night. So I wake up later as a result. So again, it's not always flexible in terms of each person's schedule, but if that is an option, that's something I would highly recommend.
All right, Avi, I have taken up a lot of your time tonight. Is there anything, I mean, there's so much that we haven't hit on, but is there anything that you find important that you want to leave us with that we haven't hit on yet?
Absolutely. So one of my favorite rules that I've learned from David Allen, Getting Things Done, is the 2-minute rule. And this is something that I find extremely helpful for my personal productivity, is that oftentimes we have these little tasks, these little things that we need to do, whether it's an errand, whether it's writing something down, responding to an email. We procrastinate for days, for weeks, for months. And sometimes really when you sit down and think about it, it will only take a minute to write that email, only take 30 seconds. And yet we're just pushing it off. So the 2-minute rule qualifies is that if a task takes less than 2 minutes, do it right away. If you're able to do it right away, just do it. Don't put it on a to-do list. Don't think about when I'm going to do it. If you have 2 minutes available, just do it. And that will oftentimes, when you're doing that mind sweep we talked about before, there are so many things on that mind sweep that I am sure, because I've had it myself, that actually take less than 2 minutes to either decide when I'm going to do it or to actually do it itself. So that's one thing that I recommend. Another tip that I love as well is that when we have those little tasks, to have a context-based next action list. And this I learned from April and Eric Perry and Learn to Become, that you have exact context of where I'm going to do that task. If it's a work-related task, is it a computer task, is it an errand, a phone call, a home, or even a to discuss with a spouse. Having those contexts and having those lists that we can use, that because oftentimes we find ourselves that we want to do something, and yet it's not the right time and not the right place to be able to do those. So by making different lists, our to-do list, and making them divided by context, so you know that when you're able to make phone calls, you have these 3 phone calls to make, you're able to knock them out. When you're running errands, there are multiple things you can pick up at the same time. I've had things on my list from Home Depot, and I'm not going to Home Depot every day. It's not Sukkot time. I'm not going to Home Depot every day, but when the next time I go to Home Depot, I have a light bulb that I need to get, I'm going to get it from the store. So having that in a context list will help me get those things actually accomplished when I need to do them.
Yep. On Erev Pesach this year, I went to the supermarket 3 separate times in the span of like 2 hours. And it was very frustrating not having that mindset of all these things that needed to be done. Cause it was like, all right, here's the list. And then you come back, all right, actually, here's a couple more things. And then I come back, like, oh, right. Actually, here's a couple more things. But yeah, I mean, every month is a hectic time, but having that list, I'll tell you what, I do that with Costco, because I have a, on my phone, I have an app that I use about, I have a running list of Costco essentials that we get all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when any of it is running low, that's when I go and get it. But we keep track of all the things that we have. So here's my aluminum foil. Here's my garbage bags. Here's my whole Costco list, my plastic spoons, whatever it is. And then I know what I have in my Costco area of my house, so that I know when those things are running low. When I bring up the next thing, then I cross it off the list.
And one thing also that comes in handy when we're cooking, and sometimes we don't have the time to write down which ingredients we are running low on. What sometimes I'll do is take the container, or I'll take the item that I'm running low on, or we ran out of, and put the empty wrapper, or put the container next to my office desk. And that's where I know that I'm going to put it on a list when I have a chance. That way I'm not going to fall through the cracks of running low on that inventory while next time I'm cooking, or next time I'm doing something around the house.
That's a great tip. Avi, where can people find you? How can they reach you if they want to use your services? Where do we know you exist?
So I have a large LinkedIn presence. That's really my main online presence. I'm Avi Friedman. And I also have...
you're the only one, right? We're going to link to Avi Friedman's LinkedIn on all of our social medias.
Absolutely. I also have a WhatsApp group called Mind Your Business, where I share productivity tips. And again, we take one tip and go through extensively each tip on a monthly basis with practical tips and tricks and concepts and mindsets about those. If you want to, we also link that on the show notes as well.
And I'm a member of that group, and it has really helped me. I've only been a member for a little bit, but it has really helped me in understanding a couple of areas that I have needed personal help on. So I do highly recommend that if you're interested in joining that group, you can reach out to us and we'll send you the link.
Absolutely. And if you want to reach out directly, the way I work with coaching is I'm open to free strategy sessions, a free 60-minute call. If you have anything that you want to brainstorm and talk about, we'll set up a session. It's complimentary, no obligations at all. And you can email me at avi@thepenguin.group. PENGUIN.group.
All right. Phenomenal. Avi Friedman, thank you so much for joining me this week. I appreciate your time and your input.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
My thanks to Avi Friedman for joining me this week. You know, we were discussing whether we should air this episode this week or take another week off. But in the spirit of the topic, we chose to air today. We hope you won't procrastinate in reading and reviewing this show. And if you know someone who could benefit from this or any other episode, sharing it. We'll speak again soon, and until next time, kol tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.